Welcome to War Room, the official podcast of the U.S. Army War College online journal, graciously supported by the Army War College Foundation. Please join the conversation at warroom.armywarcollege.edu. We hope you enjoy the program.
Greetings and welcome to Warcast, the War Room podcast, which is produced at the U.S. Army War College. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jacqueline Witt, Professor of Strategy and the Warcast Editor. Today's podcast takes a closer look at the implications for the upcoming elections in South Africa. Elections are slated for early 2019, but a year out, there is already a lot of movement within the African National Congress, or ANC, and lots of speculation about South Africa's future. In fact, events move fast, and the facts on the ground have changed in the few weeks since we recorded this podcast. So, here's a spoiler alert. Jacob Zuma resigned as president of South Africa on the 14th of February, and in the podcast, you'll hear our guests speculate about the likelihood of this possibility and their reasoning. It turns out they didn't quite get this one right, but we think that the podcast is worth broadcasting anyway because it explores so many interesting questions and ideas that are still in flux. South Africa's future remains open, and the future of the ANC and South African domestic politics is still up for debate. And it's a good reminder also, I think, of how quickly the world around us can change, the persistence of big ideas and issues, even when things on the ground change. And finally, it serves as a good reminder about the difficulty of predicting the future, as if we needed any more reassurance of that, and the uncertainty that surrounds us every day. It also, I think, reminds us that the humility that is required of those of us who comment on war, policy, and strategy is of the utmost importance. So with that, we'll turn to the conversation between Mr. Dan Hampton, the Chief of Staff and Professor of Practice and Security Studies at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, and Colonel Chris Wyatt, who is the Africa Foreign Area Officer and the Director of African Studies here at the U.S. Army War College.
So greetings and welcome to the War Room podcast. I'm Colonel Chris Wyatt, Director of African Studies at the U.S. Army War College. Today, our guest is Colonel Retired Dan Hampton, the Professor of Practice at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, D.C. Today's podcast will take a closer look at events in contemporary South Africa, where the ruling African National Congress, or ANC, faces a growing number of serious issues related to economic problems, governance, corruption, and even political questions as opposition parties begin to mount genuine electoral challenges to continued ANC rule of the country 24 years into a free South Africa. In 1994, the world watched with enthusiasm as the Liberation-era African National Congress convincingly won the first ever all-race democratic elections in South Africa and selected Nelson Mandela as the first president of a free South Africa. Affectionately dubbed the Rainbow Nation, South Africa began charting a non-racial, politically free, market-based economy future. Jumping forward to contemporary South Africa, today the ANC faces multiple challenges. Although the party has delivered on many promises, including provision of electricity, public education, and sanitation services to previously ignored and largely black African communities, it has also failed on many fronts. The ANC was stunned in August of 2016 when it lost control of nearly all of South Africa's major municipalities to the opposition Democratic Alliance, which now controls the mayor's offices and city councils of Johannesburg, Pretoria, Cape Town, and Nelson Mandela Bay. At the ANC's party conference in December 2017, Cyril Ramaphosa became president of the African National Congress. There's now considerable pressure on sitting President Jacob Zuma to step aside in advance of the end of his term in 2019 as South Africa's president. With national elections on the horizon, the party divided internally, and the opposition now controlling the major cities, what will become of South Africa's fledgling democracy? Will the ANC be able to retain control of parliament? Will the party further divide? And will this political uncertainty damage the country's economic prospects? So with that, Dan, welcome to the War Room.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me in today.
So let's just start off. Could you share a little with us on where you think South Africa is today with regard to the current political environment? Does the ANC face genuine challenges to its continued political dominance in South Africa?
Well, as you said in your intro, it's a very interesting time politically in South Africa right now with the recent ANC Congress convening and the change in leadership from Zuma to Ramaphosa. And it's really a change in philosophy and I think in how the ANC wants to govern. And then you take the rise of two viable opposition parties, viable in the extent that they exist. I'm not sure as far as how much of the population will support them within parliament, but The opposition has taken over control of some municipalities, as you say. They're making more inroads within the parliament. So it's a very interesting time. As far as the challenge to the ANC, I think it's likely that they will lose their supermajority in parliament, which will be a fundamental change. They've ruled as a de facto one-party state for some time now with the majority they have in parliament. So the opposition parties really didn't have the power within parliament that they will have if they control more seats, and the ANC does not have that supermajority.
So you say the ANC has a potential in 2019 to lose in the national elections their supermajority, which they've had in parliament since the 1994 elections.
Yes.
What's driving this? So why is the ANC losing popular support? Is it because they're not delivering on services? What's pushing? Are people moving to opposition parties, or are they abandoning the ANC?
Well, I think, you know, the AMC is not in danger of losing a majority as a whole. I mean, the majority of the population will still support the ANC. But there's a lot of dissatisfaction with the ANC, and mostly it arises over corruption. As you mentioned in your intro, the ANC has delivered on services. I mean, there was a lot of expectation of what would happen in 1994 majority rule. And it's taken some time, but there have been improvements in electrification. There's been improvement in other service delivery areas, particularly access to running water. But people are disaffected with the corruption and the continued corruption. And there's a perception that the political elite within the ANC are more interested in taking care of themselves and some of their families and others within their circle than the populace as a whole. And that's eroded their support to some extent. And that's really what's given the inroads to the opposition parties on both sides. Because, as you know, the DA is about as far to the right as the EFF, the other opposition party, Economic Freedom Party, is to the left. So they're quite different, with the ANC kind of straddling in the middle.
So it's interesting you mentioned the Economic Freedom Fighters, which trend very far to the left, and the Democratic Alliance, which trends more to the right or center-right.
Yes.
Those two parties. Yet in the municipal elections in 2016, which the ANC essentially lost in the major municipalities, we see the EFF and the DA in a coalition government in Nelson Mandela Bay, as well as Johannesburg and Victoria.
Yeah, those are interesting coalitions. And so, you know, they are pretty far apart politically, and really the common ground between the two is they both are aligned against the ANC. But as far as their positions and where the direction of the country and where they see the direction going, they couldn't be further apart, those two parties.
So in essence, it seems as though what has happened in municipal elections, in order for the Democratic Alliance to rule the city councils in some cases where they lack the outright majority at the cities I just mentioned, this is really a marriage of convenience between left and right parties.
Yeah, that's accurate, yeah.
So in December 2007 at the ANC's party conference in Polokwane in the northern part of South Africa, the ANC voted in Jacob Zuma as head of the party, which damaged the sitting South African president Thabo Mbeki's position. Mbeki resigned the presidency several months later. And now that Jacob Zuma is once again facing scrutiny over 700 criminal charges related to the arms deal that took place a couple of decades ago and some other issues, his role in that arms deal, given that Ramaphosa has just won control of the party in December, narrowly over his opponent Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, the ex-wife and former chairperson of the African Union, ex-wife of President Zuma, do you expect Zuma will resign in advance of the 2019 election, or will he hold out until the end?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, resignation is a possibility. As you mentioned, that's what Thabo Mbeki did when he lost control of the party and resigned before the end of his term, and Malante came in and finished out that term as president. But my personal opinion is I don't think he will resign, and for two reasons, really. The first is if you look at the two factions within the ANC, so the Dlamini-Zuma faction and the Ramaphosa faction, they really charted two different courses of where they thought the country was going to go. So the Dlamini-Zuma faction trended more towards left of center. So they more aligned themselves with land nationalization, you know, economic empowerments for the blacks. They had a message where they reintroduced race as part of the equation, that the whites control a large portion of the economy, and they were going to redistribute, take more socialist-type policies, and move in that direction. The Ramaphosa wing of the party was more centrist, and they were looking at, you know, sound macroeconomic principles to get the economy back on track, looking at ways they can stimulate the economy by working within the norms of an international community. So two different directions. So if Zuma were to retire early, then he would give up a little bit on that direction that faction of the party wants to go prematurely, although it will change when Ramaphosa takes power. So he can continue down that to some extent while he's still in power, although, granted, by not being in control of the party, it's limited a little, but he still has the power of the presidency. But that's the political, and I'm not sure how much Zuma is dedicated to that himself, as so much that's the way they thought was the best way to retain control. It didn't work out that way. But the other side is, as you mentioned, it's the corruption. So, you know, Jacob Zuma took office with a cloud hanging over his head from corruption dating back to the arms deal. And there's been more allegations from the public protector's office since he's been in office. And so I think if he were to step down and resign, he would probably want some assurances from Ramaphosa and others in the party that as soon as he stepped down, they weren't going to go for him and, you know, put arrest warrants out or try to try him and move forward on conviction. So I think by staying in power, he has more time to get his own house in order, take care of himself and his family. He's got a lot of family connections and those within the Zuma circle as eventually he transitions out. So I think it's in his interest probably to stay in and finish his term as president. But again, it's speculation. I really don't know. I haven't been to South Africa in a few months and I have, you know, so it could go a different direction.
Well, one would suppose that it puts Cyril Ramaphosa in a bit of an awkward position if he is the head of the African National Congress and President Zuma remains as president. And we look back at when Mbeki resigned, and perhaps for a lot of people not familiar with South African politics, it's, and particularly here in North America, it's a bit of an odd duck to us that you would be the head of the party, and if you're no longer the head of the party, that you'd have to resign elected office as president, even though you're selected by the parliament. So in essence, Thabo Mbeki was no longer head of the ANC back in 2007. As a consequence of that, he left office as president. So does this, in fact, leave Ramaphosa in an awkward position? We look at the election, and he narrowly edged out his opponent, and so it appears there's some division within the party.
Yeah, I guess it is awkward a little bit. And like I said, I mean, resignation of Zuma is a possibility. However, I think if you take the idea that when you're president for all the people of South Africa, not just the supporters within your party, then it reinforces some democratic principles and institutions. So by Ramaphosa heading the party but not being president, for him really to force the issue and try to behind the scenes work for Zuma to step down because of that, I think then would go against that idea of democracy where the sitting president is the president for all the people, not just for the ANC. So I'm not sure it's in Ramaphosa's best interest to try to push this at least, you know, on the surface and visibly.
So some have argued that, in fact, the elevation of Cyril Ramaphosa, who is likely to take a different approach than Jacob Zuma did, whereas Ms. Dlamini Zuma is likely to follow the same path as Zuma, with Ramaphosa being elevated, that in fact perhaps the biggest losers may have been the opposition. Is that true, do you think, or is that just a wild supposition?
Yeah, I think you could certainly make that case. And so I think there were many within the DA that were thinking that if the Dlamini Zuma faction had retained control of the ANC and they had lined themselves more with the EFF-type policies and had gone in a direction to the left of center, that there would have been more support for the DA in the national elections and they would have gained more ground. Whereas the Ramaphosa faction now is center, right of center, so it really eats in a little bit to some of the DA's base, which is the larger of the two main opposition parties. So in that respect, it probably hurt the DA as a whole. But if you look at it from the perspective of what was better for the country, I think most within the DA would agree that Ramaphosa leading the ANC is probably in the best interest of the country if they rise above their own political interests.
So these developments in South Africa are quite fascinating, especially if you're interested in South Africa. But what about the bigger picture? So in 2014, after decades-long period of not doing this, Nigeria reassessed and reevaluated its economic production and looked at its economy. The consequence of that is that now, reportedly, Nigeria's economy is nearly twice the size of South Africa's economy. And for a long number of decades, South Africa had the most powerful, most advanced, most modern economic system on the continent. So has Nigeria's elevation diminished South Africa's influence in Africa or at the African Union?
I don't know if it's diminished it. Certainly, they're both hegemons within Africa. Nigeria and South Africa can't be dismissed. They're the two most powerful economies in sub-Saharan Africa. And so Nigeria is a little bit different. I mean, it's a very populous country. As you know, it's the most populous country in Africa, approaching 200 million people, I believe. And there's projections that within 50 years that it will have a population higher than the United States. And Nigeria also has oil, which South Africa doesn't have. But they don't have as much of a developed infrastructure. So the economies are a little bit different. So yes, Nigeria's economy is big. It's large. Does that detract from South Africa? I don't know. South Africa has business interests, commercial interests throughout most all of sub-Saharan Africa. So it's important. It's going to remain important, both particularly within Africa. Then I also think on the international stage that South Africa can't be dismissed. And I think Nigeria's rising economic power doesn't really take so much away from that, is my opinion.
So let's assume for a moment that the ANC actually loses control of parliament narrowly in the 2019 national election coming up. What are the broader implications for South Africa? Are South Africa's democratic institutions independent, strong, or resilient enough to handle this? As we've seen, few African liberation movements that have become political parties, as is the case with the ANC, have successfully handled this transition from liberation movement to political power and then transitioning power to an opposition party. Do you think the ANC can do that? And what does the future hold beyond 2019 should the ANC lose control?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, personally, I don't think the ANC will lose control. But with the hypothetical, they would still have the largest majority of the blocks within parliament. So even if they didn't have complete control. So they have to form coalitions. And ANC is in an interesting position because they can build coalitions in both directions. So they could build coalitions with the EFF on certain issues, and they could build coalitions with the DA on others. So they would still maintain control of guiding the direction of the country if they didn't have an ultimate majority where they could do things on their own. So it is kind of interesting to be positioned between those two and doing coalition governance within parliament. As far as the institutions themselves, it's still a young democracy in South Africa. So the institutions, although on the surface may appear strong, I don't know how much resilience they would have if they were really stressed. So I think in this case, if you run the hypothetical out further and say the ANC lost power completely and a new party, say the EFF, a party that came in from the left side, it all comes down to leadership at that point. So I think with good leadership, the institutions would hold. I think if there was a leadership change and you had challenges in leadership, then the institutions, some institutions may fail. So I think it really, the importance of leadership will be crucial for South Africa's future here in the next decade or so.
Well, that's quite a bit to look forward to here for South Africa over the next several months. And we'll all be looking forward to the 2019 election to see what happens in parliament and at the national level. So with that, we'd like to thank you, Dan, for your time. Appreciate you coming into the War Room, and thank you for your participation in our podcast today.
Yeah, thank you. It was my pleasure.
And that concludes our program. Thank you for listening. The views expressed in this podcast reflect those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views, policies, or positions of the U.S. Army or the Department of Defense. Let us know what you think. Provide us your feedback, comments, or suggestions through our webpage at warroom.armywarcollege.edu, and have a great day.